friends, welcome to Interviews, Voices of Our Herbal Elders. This is my opportunity to talk to some of my dearest friends, people who have not only influenced my herbal work, but also have had a major influence on the revitalization of American herbalism. Most of us began our herbal work around the same time, in the early 1970s and 80s, when herbalism was still mostly underground, a place where plants actually thrived quite well. I love hearing people tell their herbal stories of how they began their herbal work, who and what inspired them, their favorite plant and healing stories, and I felt that others would be interested in hearing them as well. In fact, I felt it was important to capture these stories before this generation of elders passed on, as we're all destined to do. I'm honored to have as my guest today my dear friend and fellow herbalist, Brigitte Mars. Brigitte is an herbalist extraordinaire, and she's also a nutritional consultant with almost 50 years of experience. She's a founding and professional member of the American Herbalist Guild. She's an amazing educator and is passionate about spreading her knowledge and love of plants with others. Brigitte has taught at innumerable schools, conferences, and institutes throughout the United States, including, and this is just a few, the Europa University, Omega Institute, Esalen, and she's currently teaching at the School of Health Masterly in Iceland. For her full bio, and to just to get a glimpse of the influence she's had on herbal education in this country, you'll need to go to her website, and also at our website, it will be posted. Brigitte is the author of numerous books and DVDs, including some of my favorites, The Addiction Free Naturally, The Sexual Herbal, Rawsum, Natural First Aid, and many others. She's recently finished a book about her outstanding life, which we're all eagerly awaiting publication of, and which I'm going to ask her about later. Brigitte is also a psychedelic sitter and end-of-life doula. And I should also mention that Brigitte is one of the original members of the Garlic Queens, a secret society of older, wiser, and still juicy herbalists. Brigitte, thank you so much for joining me. I am so excited to have this conversation with you. I know that it will be interesting, fun, deep, and juicy. So thank you so much for being with me today.
It is certainly my pleasure and honor. Thank you, Rosemary.
So I just wanted to start by asking, do you remember when we first met? I think it had to be over 35, maybe even 40 years ago. Do you remember that incident?
Well, it was certainly Brighton Bush, but of course your name was legend before that because I used to read Wellbeing Magazine. I don't know if you remember that magazine, Wellbeing Magazine. They were one of the forerunners, and there would be articles in there about or by Kathy Keville and William LeSaucier, and your name was in there. So when I met you at Brighton Bush, I do remember, yes.
Yeah, well, I have to say, the reason I asked that is because I wanted to also just honor you and say that, you know, both of us have met like literally thousands and thousands of people in our lives at these herbal events and our travels around the world. But that moment when I met you absolutely stands out in my mind because, first of all, you look almost exactly the same. You still dress as colorfully as you did then. You're still as positive and uplifting. You just had this like fairy-like spirit, kind of danced up and you introduced yourself, you know, and your spirit was like a light being. And I've always remembered that. And what's remarkable to me is you are the same person, just wiser and older. So, yeah. So the other thing I always like to ask is because I love hearing it, is just that aha moment. If you know, a moment that you remember when the plants reached out and called you, or you first really noticed the plant world around you, is there a story that you can share with us about that?
Sure. And I think the first one is I might have been 3 or 4, and I had this wonderful French Canadian grandmother, grand-mère, and she You know, she didn't call herself an herbalist, but she was definitely a wise woman. She always kept a jar of flax seeds on the kitchen counter. And one day we were walking in the woods and we found a little wounded bird and we brought it home. She happened to have a little cage or box in the attic and she put salve on it and she fed it some flax seeds. And I remember saying, I want to be able to do that. And of course, I wanted to keep the little bird, but she said, no, it must fly back to its family. And I said, I want to learn how to be able to fix little wounded birds. So I think that was probably the first time. And, you know, there was another situation when I was a bit older and my sister, who was 12 years younger, had this skin condition called rosacea roseola or something. It was all, and I said to my parents, it started when you bought her that new chemical bubble bath. And they said, oh no, what do you know? We're going to the specialist. We're putting her on steroids. And you know what? It was the bubble bath. So I had this trust in nature really early on. So
that's really incredible. Did your grandmother influence you a lot? Or was she a big influence in your life?
Yeah, you know, she really was because, you know, being Canadian, we would go out and we would make maple syrup and pour it on snow and call it ice cream. And she made her own soap in a cauldron. And, you know, of course, there was something about herbs and fairy tales, like in The Wild Swans, the princess, you know, helped to break the enchantment of her brothers turned into swans by weaving them each a cloak of nettles. And, you know, it was like, oh, nettles. I mean, Hans Christian Andersen wrote a story called The Elder Tree Mother, and I loved fairy tales. And going back to my grandmother's, which was a very, it was like going back 100 years in time, because she had a wood stove and a root cellar and, you know, didn't have electricity, didn't have TV. So it was like, this is like something out of a fairy tale. I love it. And of course, I grew up in upstate New York, and I had a lot of health issues. I went to the ear, nose, and throat doctor, and I was on antibiotics a lot and had a lot of shots. And I said, no, just give me, grandmère would say apple cider vinegar and honey, or grandmère would say peppermint tea. Give me that.
Oh my goodness, you had a really early interest. Yeah. I think some of it was because of what was going on socially at that time too. You know, we were growing up at a time when there was an earth revolution happening. There's a revolution happening now. Maybe there's an evolution, a revolution and an evolution with every generation. But there was certainly that back to the earth and getting back to nature. It was very strong influence in our lives. But so it sounded like you were just part of that movement, right?
Yes. Rosemary, someone last night was saying something, you know, like the baby boomers maybe left the world in a mess. It's like, you know, you got to keep in mind that 50, 55 years ago, the hippies were saying solar energy, recycling, organic gardening, natural childbirth, yoga, meditation, sacred use of psychedelics, community, you know, creativity. We were doing all that. We're just waiting for y'all to catch up. So I'm glad that there's a new generation, but for some of us, we've been talking about this for so long. And, you know, we're starting to say, like, I like to joke and say the hippies were right all along.
You know, I so agree with you, Brigitte. I mean, we really did a lot of work and we brought it to the next stage. And I think it's always true that the current generation is always going to look back, you know, and forget what their elders did. Like we did that with our elders. We forgot how hard they worked to get where they were. And that's just natural, actually. It's kind of a natural process. Yeah, that's a great way. I loved how you said that and stated that. So was there a defining moment when you actually knew that you were going to be an herbalist or were an herbalist? Was there some moment in time when that happened for you?
Well, you know, if I can be candid, the first time I went into a natural food store, I was on LSD. And I was going to all girls boarding school, Miss Hall School for Young Ladies. And I went to the store, you know, one of the town boys who was kind of my pal brought me in there and I said, Tiger's Milk candy bars, you know, like, I mean, which really weren't Tiger's Milk, but it's like sprouts are alive. Wow. And then carob, papaya. So the people in the health food store kind of took me under their wing. And I was 15 years old. And every week I would go back to the Pittsfield health food store in Massachusetts. And this nice couple, every week I come in and say, we think you're ready to learn about sprouting. We think you're ready to learn about juicing. And every week I would buy a book. So I had a drawer in my boarding school, in my dorm room, and I had remedies that I was trying out on my friends. Like, you could go to the nurse and she would give you an aspirin, but you could go to Brigitte's room and she might give you a cup of chamomile tea. And so I started having this little home business, not that I charged for it, but I realized that, you know, maybe my grandmother had a fifth grade education. And even though I'm just a kid, I had the herb book by John Lust. And therefore, I would, you know, look up in the book and what can I do? And I really had this sense like, these are things that have been used by millions of people for thousands of years. And I'm not going to hurt anybody. And usually the chamomile tea would help for the cramps or the headache or something. And, you know, I ended up being expelled from Miss Hall's for some of the herbs that were in my drawer. But, you know, hey, I had a good education. And that's why I'm a writer now, because of Miss Hall's.
It sounded like you gave others there a good education to appreciate. I wonder if they remember you, you know, it would be fun to like.
Well, they do. As a matter of fact, Rosemary, I have to tell you, you know, it was my parents, you know, spent a lot of money to send me to that fine school that could have made me a debutante. And, you know, about 20 years ago, I realized I didn't have my high school diploma, so I sent them copies of all the books I had written, and the board of directors voted unanimously, give that girl her diploma. Let's put a special section in the library. She's written more books than any of our graduates, and let's do a special story on her. So I have really, you know, positive things to say now, because, you know, it was a time and what I was, you know, doing, smoking cannabis was illegal and I took a risk. But I mean, look, you know, like, here's another example of the hippies were right all along, because here's a plant that can make food, fuel, medicine, fabric, fiber, you know, all these things. So
yeah, cannabis has always been a special plant for you, hasn't it? It's like definitely before it was legal. It was a plant that you were a very good advocate for and really stood by its side when it was being villainized.
Well, I think a lot of herbalists, that might have been one of the first plants, because hey, if this does something, what does hawthorn do? What does garlic do? And I have to tell you, I was riding up a chairlift back when I used to ski, and I was sitting next to a doctor, and I told him I was an herbalist. And he said, I don't believe herbs work. And I said, well, you ever smoke cannabis? And he said, yeah, I have some right here. You want some? And I said, well, that's an herb. Does that work? And he kind of like, oh, I guess so.
Oh, I just love it. It's just great. So is there a teacher, you know, like one or two teachers that you know of who have had the most influence on your work?
Absolutely. What a great question. I am so delighted that when I moved to Boulder as a single mom with two little girls, I went to massage school. And during that time, William LeSaussier was teaching up on the hill. He like rented out this church. And even though I was in school and I was exhausted and I had homework, I went and sat at William LeSaussier's feet every night after school. And we ended up becoming really good friends. So he was definitely a big teacher in my life. You know, I did Michael Tierra's program. I worked at a health food store for many years, Alfalfa's Market. And one of the things I did was I brought all the herbalist teachers that I wanted to bring to Boulder. You know, you and Susan Mead and Rose and Kathy Cavill and Mindy Green and Roy Upton and Christopher Hobbs, Herbal Ed. So this was an opportunity. I've got this big health food store that's going to take care of the marketing and the advertising. And all I have to do is, you know, find a place and they can stay at my house and then I'll really get the download. But William was definitely a really big teacher in my life. But I want to mention that I lived for 2.5 years in a teepee in the Ozarks. This was before moving to Boulder. And it was a commune. And there was an old hillbilly woman. And she had outlived 3 husbands. And the hippies would go over there and we would like do little chores for her. And she'd give us, you know, 12 eggs or, you know, 5 pounds of flour or something. And I was going to help her weed the garden. And I put my hand on something. And she said, wait, that there's lamb's quarter. It's wild spinach and you can eat that. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, we can eat this stuff. This means we have 3 times more food in the garden than I thought. We're rich. We're rich. So I want to credit, you know, that old hillbilly wisdom, Mrs. Glore.
Mrs. Glore. Yeah, it's amazing those how it is in the villages and the hills and, you know, around the corners, there's these old people whose names so often aren't well known, but they have so much wisdom. Yeah, you know, I wanted to share with you, Brigitte, that so many people that I've interviewed have mentioned William as one of their primary teachers, you know. And yeah, he came to herb school very early on, you know, when we were, and I would say he was profound. The other thing I wanted to also mention in what you were just saying is I was fortunate to be one of those people that you invited to Boulder. And part of coming to Boulder was staying with you in your magical house because when you talked about, you know, growing up with the fairy tales and loving that, you live the life of a fairy queen, you know. I mean, your home is remarkable. It's a stopping over place in Boulder just to visit. Someday it will be a museum, I'm sure. But you've just surrounded yourself with beauty.
Thank you. Truth, beauty, and goodness. Why be normal and boring? So I do really like that. I'm actually going to have a meeting with the Boulder Historical Society to see if we might create the Brigitte Mars Psychedelic Museum and Memorial Library. What am I going to do with all these books? And then maybe my kids and grandkids, you know, someone can live in the basement and give tours twice a week. And, you know, maybe, I don't know. We'll see if it's feasible.
Great idea. It is a great idea. You know, you've been the kind of living model to me, at least, of the community herbalists in your community in Boulder. I think you've lived there for, what, 50 years in the same house on the same street?
Well, because I've never learned to drive, I always have lived downtown. So I've always lived within a few blocks. But I've been in this house probably 40 years.
Yeah. And you know, you see clients in that house and you do your work there. You've made products, you know. And so do you see yourself kind of as that community herbalist model?
Yes, I certainly do. I mean, I do a weekly radio show on our community radio station. I just came from doing that. I mean, every day, Rosemary, my prayer is, you know, I am here to help you. Let me know what I can do to help. And, this is my prayer to the Creator. And I've always felt it was a mission that if I can, my way of helping the Creator is to help reconnect people to the plants that maybe they've, you know, didn't learn about or they thought were weeds. And, you know, I still have so much energy that I'm so blessed. I want to give back. And of course, I do see clients in my house for health consulting. And, you know, I'm a psychedelic sitter. I have been, you know, since I was at Miss Hall School, but now I'm a graduate of the psychedelic sitter school. And the university where I teach at, Naropa University, now has a department of psychedelic studies. So, you know, we're kind of on the forefront here in Colorado with it's decriminalized. So we're on the right track. But of course, I love this community. And even though, like I said, I've never learned to drive, I can walk with my rolly bag to 8 different health food stores that sell organic food. Like, what is there to complain about?
You also travel all over the world too, right? You get some. It's always amazing to me that you don't drive and yet you can get yourself to those airports and just travel everywhere. It's really, it's remarkable and magical.
Well, I do use the bus.
I know.
I do take the bus to the airport.
You don't fly? I have a feeling that you fly.
Well, I do fly. And, you know, the other night I was at a party and since I don't drive, like I knew that my partner was going to stay much later at the party. I just looked for somebody that I recognized. Like if you're driving towards downtown, you can ask me any herbal questions you want. And then, you know, just drop me off near the mall.
Yeah. You know, another thing I've always admired you for is that you've, ever since I've known you, you've lived such a busy life. You know, you've taught, you've written just numerous, numerous books. And, you know, you ran a very busy herb company for many, many years, your tea company, which was really well received nationally, not just in Boulder. And yet you still managed to raise two beautiful, healthy daughters and spend time with your family. And so how are you able to do all of that, Brigitte? It's like, you know, just, you know, to balance that. It's a difficult thing for people to balance often.
You know, I love the model of the feng shui bagua. You know, in bagua is a grid, and feng shui means wind and water. And I'm sure most of your listeners have heard of this. But in feng shui, there's nine sectors of the bagua. There's career. There's new knowledge and wisdom. There's community. There's wealth. There's reputation. There's children and creativity. There's helpful people and travel. And then there's health. And it's really easy to just focus on career and relationship or children and health. But to really have a balanced life, I think it's good to put energy into all the sectors of the bagua. So if you organize your home according to this feng shui grid, you kind of say like, you know, like, well, I got the cat litter box in the wealth corner. No wonder, you know, things are not working out. So I try, you know, so part of it is in organizing your life. I will also say, Rosemary, I am a big believer in writing things down. I like to say, if you think it, ink it. I write everything down. So if I say I'm going to do something, I write it down. How many times do we like, oh, someone invited you to this great party. Is it a potluck? Is it a birthday party? Or they're going to be playing music. I write it down. And I love this. This is the law of attraction planner. So I love this. And I even have a place in the back where I write down movies that people tell me I might like or books that I might like. I have a place where I write down all the things I lent people during the year. And then around Halloween or Samhain, I like, you know, you've had my Clan of the Cave Bear for a year now. Either read it or give it back. And then I've also written down a list of all the things I want to accomplish in my life because, you know, as an end-of-life doula, you're supposed to think about what would you do if you only had 3 months to live, okay? And I mean, a lot of us aren't blessed to know that we've got 3 months, but like do those things now. Do those things now so that you're not like, you know, trying to finish that painting or that book in your like last few weeks.
I just learned a whole lot from you, Brigitte. Thank you so much. I'm going to get my little notepad out. It's really a great idea. And you are a person who actually has walked your talk, you know, totally. Like that's what I was saying about watching you, you know, just create and do and be so effective and so fulfilled in what you do. It's been lovely. It's been a lovely journey for me to watch you actually. So I know that you are a professional psychedelic sitter, and I'd love to hear more about that. I'm sure our listeners would as well. I think you've been one for probably a long time, but now it's official. Can you just share a little bit about what you do with that work?
Thank you so much. So, you know, I go way, way back with Rosemary Leary, who was married to Tim Leary. So the other Rosemary in my life was Rosemary Leary. And when she was on the run, she was living in a house in Canada with me and my first husband and a few people. But we've had so many years of just say no. And yet there's always been this underground collective like, yeah, but, you know, San Pedro cactus and, you know, like this herb and that herb and psilocybin. And so one of the things that I learned so much from Rosemary was about the importance of creating safe set and setting. And over the years, I've seen a lot of people like they might take some of these medicines, which can be very strong and unlock repressed memories in what I think might not really be that safe situations like a concert or a festival, or you lose your friends. And that might be one kind of ceremony. And there's also the idea of like doing these things with a small group of friends in a very safe place, like, you know, going in the forest or the beach. But I learned that it could be really helpful to have a guide. And a guide is someone who's going to keep the space safe, keep you hydrated, hold your hand, hand you tissues. Most important thing is to set an intention. And I want to say that this kind of sacred plant medicine, I only work with sacred plant, I just work with plant medicines. It's really important to have an intention, not just like, oh, take this and see what happens. If you have an intention like, I want to be a better parent. I need to know my next step. I have a big decision to make. I want to be less afraid to die. I want to open my creativity. So if you have an intention and you have someone who's helping to keep you safe, hydrated, walk to the bathroom, hand you tissues when you cry, record some of the like, oh, people might say something, you know, get an idea for a company or someone they need to reach out to. I'm not going to engage in discussion with them, but I'll write it down. I'll encourage them to bring their journal. So I sit with them. I'm not the medicine provider. So I make it clear that I'm the sitter and I'm going to help them to be safe so they can journey really deep. And this isn't microdosing. These are generally, you know, large doses that are used in a safe set and setting. And it's really profound work. And I'm seeing a lot of people. I see all kinds of people. I've had young people who are about to go off to college and their therapist or their parents thought that they should have this experience. I was very moved that a few months ago, I had an 82-year-old man with stage 4 prostate cancer come because he came with his hospice care worker and his reason he was afraid to die. And, he said, I've got it. I'm not afraid. I know there's more than the material realm. And then the next week his hospice care worker came. So it's really rewarding work. And it's not for everybody. And I usually screen people like, you know, if you're on SSRI drugs, you know, if you haven't done therapy, it's not a substitute for eating healthy and using herbs and taking supplements and all the good things, getting enough sleep. But there are some people who are, you know, needing to break through. And I am finding that a lot of people are so traumatized from so many things in life, sexual abuse or divorce or, you know, loss of a love or a child or a pet. And, you know, people hold on to so much trauma. And what they often get in the experience is, it's not happening now. I can let go of it and move on. So I really hold space for that. And I'm really honored and privileged to do it. And I continue my training, learning from other people who've been doing this. But I feel that having Rosemary Leary and Terrence McKenna, who's just staying here, were also really great teachers to have on my hard drive.
Absolutely. Yeah. You got programmed very early. Yeah, that is remarkable work. So is this actually a profession now? Is this something I heard you mention that you had gotten a certificate or done? Is there like actually a profession or a certification course on being a psychedelic sitter, or is it just?
Well, it's still really nebulous and it's still being thought out. So a lot of psychotherapists are saying, oh, we want to be able to do this because the other drugs we've been using haven't been working that well. All right. So there's a lot of therapists who want to get in on it. But there are programs to license people. And of course, they're very expensive. My goal is to help teach people who want to be licensed. But I did graduate from a program called Medicinal Mindfulness Psychedelic Sitter School. We learned to work with cannabis because it was totally legal at the time. It was before the decriminalization. I'm very interested in this. And again, I'm taking another course. I just read the Psychedelic Explorer's Guide because I think we need just say how, because these things could be dangerous and they're not for everybody. And we want to have a positive outcome. They have a great potential to be very healing for people. And again, people who've tried everything might find that this might hold some promise and answers for them.
That's awesome. Beautiful, honey. You know, the other thing that you're doing that's, again, kind of Pathfinder-like is the end-of-life doula, you know. And I was just made aware recently when I saw you actually in Boulder the last time that you were doing this work. And I'm really curious, I think our listeners would be also, is I'd like to know how you got into it and then really what that work is for you. And if you have any stories, the stories are always great to hear.
Surely. So I took a course through the Conscious Dying Institute, and then I ended up teaching in the Conscious Dying Institute. And we also did a whole podcast series, which you can find online. It's called Waking Up Before We Die, which is about the use of sacred plant medicine before death. So it's a difficult conversation for people to have, even within families. And we want to be in denial about death. But, you know, we do know in our natural living modality that if you want to have a natural childbirth, you're going to like read a book about it. You're going to drink the raspberry leaf tea. Maybe you're going to do the prenatal yoga. Maybe you're going to take a class on, you know, how to do Lamaze breathing or hypnobirthing or whatever. Get an aqua doula pool. You're going to do some preparation. And yet when it comes to death, like, oh, I don't want to talk about it, or my loved ones will think that I want them to die. But, you know, very often people die unexpectedly and nobody knows what your wishes were. Did you want to be resuscitated? Did you want to donate your body to science? Did you want to be cremated? Did you want a Christian burial? Do you want a Buddhist cremation? Like, what's the deal? And some people, like, they don't, you might have told somebody, but if you don't have advanced directives written down where somebody can find them, you're really leaving a mess for your heirs to clean up. And so I get together with families and we talk about the hard stuff, like, what is it that you would like? What kind of ceremony would you like? What would you want to be dressed in to be viewed, you know, and how you could plan it. So it's really a celebration of life. And I do believe that life is eternal and that we do see our loved ones again. So how can we take the sting and the stigma out of it and, you know, get to embrace the possibility that our loved ones have gone off on a cruise and we're all here weeping and missed so much, but then they get to go off on a cruise and someday we're going to be going there. And I do believe we'll be reunited. So I try to bring a little humor into it and a little, you know, spirituality, but I talk about things like, you know, planning what you want and making it easy for yours, like cleaning up all your stuff. And who do you need to forgive? Who do you need to ask forgiveness for? How could you be more spiritually ready? And so I'd say the best thing is I had a father come with his daughter, and you know, he did pass, but he, you know, he had an antique business. So he valued all the things and he went to visit his three ex-wives. And his daughter said, I never knew seeing an end-of-life doula could be so much fun. So, but it's really getting the family to talk and talk about the hard stuff. And then there's like even movies you can suggest that people watch, like Departures or Dying Wish or Astral City. So I try to like get them ready to have the discussions and then be an advocate so that your wishes get done and your family isn't fighting about what he said, she said, and what their wishes are.
Awesome. So there's actually meeting with the family afterwards just to make sure that. So Brigitte, does the death doula also sit with the dying person? Is that also part of what a death?
That is another part of it. And so there's different times when you might come in. It might come in when like someone's just gotten the diagnosis and they know they're going to die. That's usually when I come in to help prepare. But then there's also the sitting with them, going and playing music with them. I recently went with someone and my friend played the didgeridoo and I did the, you know, Tibetan singing bowls, you know, praying with them, breathing with them, you know, giving the families a little bit of a break. You know, emptying the dishwasher. And then of course there's remedies for grief, you know, like homeopathic Ignatia, motherwort, islet. And you know, this is a really hard thing, but you know, I went through a divorce after 38 years of marriage a few years ago. And Rosemary, you were so kind. You sent me the most beautiful card, which I have framed. But around the same time, one of my best friends, her husband died. And my massage therapist said, make a list of 100 reasons why this is okay. And I thought, like, what's okay about this? There's nothing okay about this. And my friend who'd lost her husband, we started making a list together. You know, they're not suffering. And my list was stuff like, I don't have to vacuum every day. And I don't have to like make gourmet meals, and I can wear pink eyeshadow if I want to. And, but you know, we started making a list, like, they're not suffering. I can focus on my own work. And we just worked on that. And I found that to be really helpful. And I did like that movie Astral City a lot, which kind of shows that it's based on someone's experience in the near death experience realm. And it seems really positive. And of course, the Urantia book, which I've long been a reader of, you know, does say we see our loved ones again. We continue. It's an evolutionary career. You're not going to come back as an aunt. And you know what? You don't even have come back. You don't necessarily even have to come back to the same planet. There's a whole universe to explore, and the universe is designed to be inhabited. And it sounds glorious. So, I mean, being born is less scarier than dying.
I agree with you. Yeah, that's such a beautiful outlook, Brigitte. And, you know, again, you live your life this way. It's really beautiful, you know. Yeah. So, I know you probably have many instances of stories, but I love hearing the stories of when people saw plants, like work miracles, you know, healing miracles, either on themselves or someone else. I call it witnessing for the plants, you know. We used to do that at the herb conferences, where we just have a space where people could get up and witness for the plants. So I'd love it if you have a story or two to share of just when you've seen plants work miracles.
Yeah, so many. Garlic has always been an ally, and I've, you know, used it for so many things. I had COVID twice. I put raw garlic in my baked sweet potatoes. Like, that was great. My daughter Rainbow had asthma when she was little, but I will share this. My daughter Rainbow, when she was little, had asthma, and twice we took her to the hospital because I didn't know what it was. And they gave her, back then they gave shots of adrenaline. And it was like, oh, this seems really intense. And at the time I was going to massage school. So I started doing all my papers for anatomy, for physiology, for nutrition, for herbal medicine. I just started, like, every paper I did was on asthma. For five element theory, it was on, you know, the metal element, lungs, large intestines. So I just started learning every aspect of it. And I learned about this formula, which is really similar to the fire cider, but it was before I heard the term fire cider. And it was actually this Rastafarian who told me, put in a blender, honey, lemon juice, garlic, ginger, and cayenne pepper. So sort of a, you know, a bridge version of a fire cider. And I blended it all up. And if Rainbow started to have asthma, I would give her a spoonful of that. And then I also taught her how to do yoga breathing, you know, like, and I put a little duck on her belly and I say, like, make the waves get big. Now make the waves get small. So I put a little duck on her belly and I taught her to do yoga breathing. And now she's got like 30 yoga DVDs and has taught yoga and, you know, all around the world, and has gone on tour with, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers and U2 to teach them yoga. And so, you know, I would say it's really simple. And I love, Rosemary, how you really value the kitchen medicines, because people think, like, oh, it's so daunting and vast. But I love dandelion. You know, dandelion, we eat dandelion all the time. And I think that when we learn to eat the wild weeds, that these are Jedi plants that adapt to adversity. So we can look at the world and say, oh my God, there's chemtrails and electromagnetic pollution and 5G is coming to your town, and oh, what's in the water, and chemical spill. But the dandelions survive adversity. They grow. No one planted them, no one mulched them, no one weeded them or watered them, and they thrive. And so I really think the answer is, eat the weeds. And when we eat something so fresh that it was just growing, you can't get that at Whole Foods. I mean, even though I'm glad they're there, but how long ago was your organic kale in the ground, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, you have that wonderful new book coming out on Dandelion, which I love. I got to preview it. It's just stunning. You know, the information is incredible and entertaining and deep. And then those wonderful illustrations. I'm so excited that it's just highlighting Dandelion. It's really, it's coming out this spring, right? Or
yes. And thank you so much. And I think you've written a comment for the back cover or something, but I actually wrote the book maybe 30 years ago, and I thought, this is going to save the world. They're going to put this on the shelves where the Roundup used to be. And you know what? The book did well in China. It was translated into Spanish as well as Chinese, and it went out of print in English. But Story Publishing, who I know we both love and work with a lot, they are redoing it. And so hopefully the time is now, Rosemary. Again, we've been saying this for so long, but free food and medicine in your yard. This is a Jedi plant. This is the plant that has superpowers.
That's, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, I can tell you that book is going to be selling in Tractor Supply and in the grocery stores. You know, it is its time. It's Dandelion's time. So I know you have a lot of different special plant allies, but I'd love to hear you talk about, you know, the ones that you are always there for you when you need them. Those special plants that have kind of become your more than just plant medicine for you, but really like allies that are there to support you. I'm sure Dandelion's one of them, but I know you have others.
I always like to say, if I were going to another planet and I could bring three plants with me, they would be dandelion, nettles, and cannabis. You know, I just had the discussion. Yarrow, who's the son of Terry Willard. Yarrow Willard. He's a young herbalist. I just saw him at Natural Products Expo. And Feather Jones and Roy Upton and I were all standing there. And he said, I always like to ask the older herbalists, if you could only have one plant with you, what would you bring? And Roy said, coconut. And I said, well, I would bring hemp seeds. And he said, no, I would bring coconut. I said, well, coconut only grows in the tropics and it takes a long time to get that big tree. But cannabis grows as tall as a tree in one season, and you could eat the leaves, juice the leaves, make, you know, sandals and fiber and fabric and da, da, da. But I do want to give kudos to nettles. So a German woman gave me one nettle plant years ago. I transplanted it to my new home, and now I have 100,000 nettle plants growing by the side of our house. In Boulder. And I live in Londo. I don't own the land, but, you know, I do a lot of guerrilla gardening. So within a season, I can cut the nettles three times and dry them and have nettles for the winter. But tonight I'm going to make nettles spanakopita. Okay. And for my class on Wednesday, we're going to make nettle potato soup. And you know what? I am even a big fan of nettles urtication, the getting stung with nettles. And this is going to sound crazy, but Rosemary, you've always said that, you know, the garlic queens, we need to be the ones to show we're not doing Botox. We're going to rejoice in our beauty. And I sting my face with nettles. It's like a little herbal facelift. I just like take a nettle and I go whack, 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 whack. And then I'm a little red for a few minutes, but it brings all this fresh blood flow to the area. And, you know, my daughter Rainbow, who's had a career as a supermodel, she comes home from Hollywood and says, Mom, I need you to spank my butt and my thighs with nettles. I'm doing a swimsuit shot. Okay. And then, you know, hair loss, sting your scalp with nettles. And, you know, before the days of Viagra, sting the lingam to bring fresh blood flow to the area. I know you're all probably thinking, no wonder she's divorced, but I just want to tell you that it is totally safe. Not that he had problems with that, but it really does bring fresh blood flow to the area. And arthritic joints, you know, like I have little stiffness in my fingers and I deliberately get stung with the nettle. So that's a whole nother aspect. I even have a nettle dress. I didn't make it, but, you know, if I want to play Viking woman, I have this nettle dress because it's also a fabric plant. And of course, Rudolf Steiner said nettles are the heart of the world. But the resiliency of this plant, and every spring I cut them. I make cuttings and I put them in water so they root. And I always say last week March, first week in April, I'll have 100 nettle plants on my porch to give away so that when I leave the planet, there will be thousands of nettle patches because it thrives well here.
Oh, that's just wonderful. Yeah, you know, that urtication was actually an old treatment. You know, there's not very many people who do it anymore, but I do know a couple of men, Dr. Jim Duke, very well-known, respected. He supposedly urticated. I know a couple other men also. I don't think they did it a second time, but they did it once.
And, you know, I had a bone spur in my foot. I put nettle in my shoe and walked on it. And I had a tooth infection, and I put nettle up in there too. And took a lot of antimicrobial herbs and was able to avoid doing the antibiotics. So, and I've even done it over my eyelids, over my closed eyelids. And here I am, you know, I used to wear glasses and I don't still, but I used to wear, I wore glasses until 10th grade. So I don't know. I do this crazy stuff, eat blueberries, do the eye exercises. And I have stung over my eyelids with nettles. You might not like me if you try it, but I just wanted to say, I believe it's safe. I really do.
It's great. I'm going to try the facial. I don't know about the urtication below the belt, but definitely I'm going to try the facial. So thank you for being such an inspiration. Also, thank you for just speaking your truth. I love that about you. So you are a great writer, and you've written, I've lost count, but you must have written, I think, over 10, maybe even more books. Some have liked you. 14, yeah. And you have a couple more coming out.
I do. I have Dandelion Medicine coming out this spring. And Rosemary, I so appreciate, because you wrote a foreword for a book that I did several years ago that also went out of print. It was called The Home, Reference to Holistic Health and Healing. Like, how friggin' generic is that? So it went out of print, but Inner Traditions is re-releasing it to be called Natural Remedies for Mental and Emotional Health. And we're still using... Yeah, so I'm really excited about that because, you know, in Asian medicine, herbs and acupuncture and diet are used for depression and anxiety and fear and grief and stroke recovery and all of that. But here it's like we have a whole different modality. If you have physical conditions, you go to this kind of doctor, and mental conditions, you do this. And I feel like this is a real integration because, you know, very often people with depression, and we know that it is a, you know, huge problem in our culture, they could have a food allergy that's causing brain inflammation. They could have a nutritional deficiency. They could have stagnant liver qi, as we say in, you know, Asian medicine. They could have a low thyroid. And so I'm trying to bridge the gap because there are things that we can do for mental problems like anxiety and fear and grief. And so I'm really excited about that. And as you know, I have long been working on a memoir book. I'm still in the like fine editing stages, but it's called, and of course you're in it, Rosemary. I have a few chapters, but there's one called Plant Freaks. There's a lot of the chapters have fun titles, but the book is called, it will be called Wildflower Child, A Tale of Sex, Psychedelics, and Natural Foods. But there's chapters with names like Tangled Up in Tie-Dye or Prep School Girls Gone Wild or Through the Rabbit Hole, Come Together. Yeah, so it's a real journey because, you know, a lot of these stories of the 60s are written by men or written by rock stars, but they often end up in like, and then I had to go to rehab because I, you know, did too much coke and all that. But because I was a young mother, I had Sunflower when I was 18. I had Rainbow, you know, 4 years after that. And I was using herbs on them for, you know, everything. There was always this sense like, I need to be responsible. I need my kids to be well nourished. We're not going to like hippie kids have rickets or something. It was like, so I tried a lot of this herbal stuff out on them. And, you know, for a while I lived in the Ozarks and the teepee without electricity and all of that. So I'm writing about all of that, but I feel like this is a story of, you know, not taking the descent into addiction, but like combining my love of nature and plants and health and healing and all of that. And so you know, that has taught me a lot. And of course, there's like a lot of shameless name dropping in the book, like, you know, oh, when Alex Gray comes over, or you know, whatever, Tim Lee or Yoko Ono's on the phone. But that kind of makes it sort of cultural because people can relate. Oh, I remember Fizzies. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful. I know a little bit about your life and your life story, and it's fascinating. And it has so many different twists and turns, you know, and you have known so many amazing people. So yeah, it'll be really fun when that book comes out. Of the books that you've published, that are already published and out, do you have a favorite? Like one that you just really just adore for whatever reason?
They're all like our little children, as you know, Rosemary, and you've probably written like way more books than I have. But, you know, I love Natural First Aid because, you know, we need to be prepared for an emergency. And, you know, this is just like a little pocketbook. And not only does it tell you what to do for like bee stings and broken bones and all that, it has what to do for a bad trip, but it also has like finding water when there is no water and what to do in an avalanche and what to do if there's radiation or what to do what to do if someone's in a coma. So there's a lot of things that you're not going to find in a regular first aid book. And so I'm really happy about this. A few wild foods that you can recognize. And I really think that that book has saved my life twice already just by writing the book. We had a fire in our house, and I knew that if I poured water on the lamp that had burst into flames, that the whole house would short out. But I remembered from writing the book, like, no, you got to unplug it before you do that. And then I also remember thinking like, oh, it's really smoky in here. I should open a window. But I remembered, no, that's going to give more oxygen to the fire. And, you know, I also put the story in that, you know, I got bit by a copperhead many years ago. And this is when I did have electricity, but my husband, Tom, he used the shop vac and he sucked the venom out. And I thought that was really good. He sucked the venom out really quick. And the thing is, sometimes you just have to make something up and use what you have.
That's part of being ready for an emergency. Yeah, that is an excellent book, by the way. And I'm sure it's popular right now because so many people are thinking about being ready for emergencies and stuff. I also love your book that you did on the sexual herbal. I think that's great. And then Addiction Free Naturally. You take subjects and then you go into them really deep. They're not just, you know, you're not just hitting on the same things everybody else is. And you integrate a lot, like you were talking about with the mental health of integrating, you know, diet and food and herbs and all the different things. You actually do that with every subject, you know. So I think those two books are incredibly important and really valuable and fun.
Thank you so much. And even things like, you know, color therapy, like if someone's really depressed, maybe like wearing some color or, you know, redecorating your place, or, you know, if someone's really anxious, like maybe red's not the color to wear today. Maybe you want like calming blue. So color therapy, aromatherapy, flower essences. We've got so many allies. And, you know, of course, when we write a book, we learn so much. We embody and grok, which is now in the dictionary. You know, we really get it. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. So, it's kind of odd to ask you this question because I don't think that you, but I'm going to ask it to you anyway. So
I love odd. I love odd. Well, the Wizard of Odds.
Well, I just, you know, the way I was going to ask it is like, were there any particular challenges facing you when you first started working with plants and became an herbalist? But you take every challenge and you sort of make it into, you know, an opportunity. So that's what I was saying. But I will ask you that. Were there any particular challenges or difficulties when you first began your practice of herbalism?
So for a while, you know, when Sunflower and Rainbow were little, I worked half a day in a health food store and I was making minimum wage and they wanted me to, like, you know, wear lipstick and tie my hair and like, and I was like, oh, this really, So I said, I'm going to go to travel agency school. Okay. And I was all set to go to travel agency school. And then John Hay, who was one of the financial backer and founders of Celestial Seasonings, he said, this health food store, Pearl Street Market, is looking for an herbalist because they have this bulk herb section, but nobody buys anything because nobody knows what to do with it. And, you know, I really consider John Hay to be a mentor of mine because he helped me write a resume until I got it right on his typewriter. And so I ended up having this herb department and I started demoing teas. And then I realized, well, we're still not selling a lot. So I'm going to start offering classes outside of the store. So I started teaching at Naropa and at my house and, you know, giving herb walks. And so, you know, I really think that it was that turn, like, wow, I was so happy. I had an herb department given to me. So a lot of young herbalists who are listening here, you know, if you're wondering what the next step is, you're like, you know, see if you can work in the nutrition department of a health food store or in an herb store and like, just like ordering the herbs and putting them away and their fragrance and maybe serving a different tea to the public and getting to know each one. And, you know, so to me, that was just so rich. But, you know, in the beginning, I didn't talk a lot about things like the doctrine of signatures, the idea that plants maybe tell us what they're good for by the way they look and by the way they grow, because that just seemed a little woo-woo. But now it's like, no, you know, you're menstruating, you should make some borscht or eat blueberries for your eyes. And yeah, cauliflower is really good for the brain and seaweed for the hair. So I don't mind being a little woo-woo right now because, you know, the more we look at botany and flower essences and homeopathy, it does seem that the signatura, the sign of nature, the imprint of the divine is, it abounds in nature.
So true. I loved how you did take what was challenging and turned it into a great opportunity. I knew you could do that because you do that with your life, you know, again. So when you look at, you know, the herbal community today and the young herbalists coming up, what do you see are the challenges facing them? It's entirely different than when we were young herbalists, right?
I mean, I remember in Brighton Bush, there were like 20 of us, you know, around the country, you know, Stephen Foster, David Winston, Michael Moore, Michael Chair, you, Kathy Keville, Mindy Green. It's like, and now there's like probably 200 herb schools in the country. And I once in a while teach at the Colorado School of Clinical Herbalism, and I see that they're getting, you know, really good education. They're learning a lot about, you know, constituents, and I'm sure every school is different. But I see that this is a career path that a lot of young people want to have. And if you, you know, look at TikTok, of which I am a big fan of, there's a lot of people coming out and really trying to make this like a regular everyday thing. It's not like only for the herbalist. This is medicine for the people. And, you know, it really should be every, you know, homemaker, mother, father, scout leader, wilderness, like we should all know this. And it's going to help us to be better stewards of the earth. And I love David Hoffman, who's another dear friend and herbal elder. Like, you know, he always used to say, like, you know, the healing of our planet coincides with the healing of humanity. And when our planet is sick, humanity's sick. And so you can't really be an herbalist without really being a steward of the planet. So I'm glad we need more people on our team. Yeah, it was great when we were just the only 20 and we were, you know, really famous, but we still are, and we're going to be the elders. And we're so glad that you're all catching on and that you can buy natural foods just about everywhere. And that chamomile is the most borrowed name. Thank you, you know, Celestial Seasonings, which is also a Boulder company for, you know, like you helped. We all helped. And so now it's becoming an ordinary thing. And young people are growing up with this. And it's a course in universities sometimes, like Naropa.
That's awesome, isn't it? Yeah, that's such, again, such a positive, putting it all into such a positive perspective. It's just beautiful. And you do it naturally. You're not trying to do that. It just comes, I think it's because you lived your life this way. So at this point in your life, it just comes like, it just flows right through you. So Bridget, you know, we're kind of coming to the end of our time and you have accomplished and done so much in your life and are still accomplishing and doing so much, but Is there anything in particular that you're particularly proud of that you've done in your life that, you know, like you would just stand and go, I'm so glad I did that. You know, is there anything that stands out for you?
You know, I just think that the whole life and doing it all without driving, you know, to be 70 and have never learned to drive a car, like, you know, I'm grateful that I got to teach and influence people. And I could say, you know, I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to raise my daughters. I'm grateful that I wrote the books. I'm grateful for the life that I've had. I really feel like I've learned a lot, and I'm going to keep going as long as I can. And we could focus on the problems of the world, but we could all do something. Even if it's growing tomatoes on our balcony or letting your neighbors know, like, don't spray the dandelions. Let me harvest them and I'll bring you a salad. We can all do something. And I guess the last things I want to say, because when I have the mic, I always like to say the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The next best time is now. And if you have water to throw away, throw it on a plant.
That's so beautiful, honey. Thank you so much for being on this planet. I'm so glad I'm here with you. You know, it's really just inspiring to listen to you, and I'm so grateful for you. Thank you so much. You know, I always like to end by, if you have any wise words to offer, and you just did that. You just did it naturally. So thank you, sister, so much.
And thank you so much. And thank you for what you do, Rosemary. Bless you. And I hope our paths cross again soon. Mm-hmm.